Well, we know that it's Mother's Day again, so congratulations to all the moms out there. Mother's Day, of course, is a celebration and an opportunity to highlight the work of mothers. But motherhood does not function just in a vacuum. There's a set of situations, there's a set of other things going on in motherhood, a context in which motherhood is supposed to operate, a limited set of responsibilities and structures. And we find a brief description of what motherhood ought to be or what it can be in Psalm 128. This short psalm describes the blessed life, what we might call the good life today. When people talk about the good life, they often think in terms of material possessions, having the cottage with the white picket fence and maybe a couple of cars and nice vacations and good health and all those things. That's the good life. And many people are striving for the good life. In America, we sometimes call it the American dream. And many of us have achieved the American dream, and that's wonderful and everything. But the good life oftentimes is pursued irrespective of biblical principles. The Bible says we can have the good life. God provides a good life, a dream-like life for many people if we can simply follow the pattern and follow the commands that God gives us. Most people, I think, naturally want that good life. They want to be happy and fulfilled. Much of the good life depends on family relationships. And Psalm 128 describes some of those relationships. We can enjoy the good life if we apply biblical principles to our lives. In fact, much of the unhappiness, the dysfunction that we see in our world today, in families today, is because they simply ignore or neglect or deny the biblical principles as we see them reflected here in Psalm 128. So let's look at this picture then of the good life from Psalm 128 and see what it tells us about motherhood and the family. This text is not simply about motherhood. It goes on to describe other parts of the good life, but motherhood plays a big role in this passage. So notice Psalm 128 verses 1 and 2, first of all. Actually, throughout here we have these expressions of blessing. The good life is a blessed life. Notice Psalm 128 and these words to describe this blessing. Blessed is everyone that feareth the Lord and that walketh in his ways. For thou shalt eat the labor of thine hands. Happy thou shalt be. It shall be well with thee. So we find several words here that describe the blessing of this good life. First of all, blessed is everyone. This is the word in Hebrew, Asher. I think we know some children who are named Asher. And it describes happiness, happy, blessed, characterized by happiness or divine favor. God is inclined to show his blessings toward us when we persist in following the patterns for family life that God gives us. In fact, this word is in the plural, which suggests something like how blessed, incredibly blessed, much blessed is the person who follows this pattern. He used the word happy in verse 2, and it's actually the same root word, the same Hebrew word. I'm not sure why they translate it blessed and then happy, because it's really the same word, but it's the same idea. Same person who follows this pattern is going to be happy. And then verse 2 as well, it shall be well with thee. That's another different Hebrew word. It's a common word that simply means good. Have you ever heard Jewish people say mazel tov or mazel tov, which means something like good luck? Well, that tov is the word good. I'm not sure what mazel means. I forget what that means. But tov or tof is good. So it shall be good. It shall be well with thee. That's another word here. And then verse 4, we haven't read that. Behold, thus shall the man be blessed that feareth the Lord. There's the common word for bless. And so he's going to be blessed. It's going to be good or pleasing or valuable. This is, like I said, the common word. And then the Lord shall bless thee. That's again verse 5. The Lord shall bless thee out of Zion. So we have three different Hebrew words here describing the blessedness, the happiness, or the goodness that people will enjoy if they follow this pattern. We can enjoy much blessing, happiness, and goodness from our families when we do things God's way. And like I said, I think most people want to enjoy happiness and blessedness and fulfillment from their families. Now, family can be a very difficult situation. We all know that. And sometimes things don't work out the way that we would want them to work out. But when we put ourselves in God's hands, we submit to his teaching and his pattern, more likely than not, we will enjoy the blessings of family life. So it's a blessed life, and then the good life begins with a fear of the Lord, as he says in verse 1 again, blessed is everyone that feareth the Lord. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. We know the Bible says in Proverbs, and the fear of the Lord is really the beginning of the blessed life, especially family life. To have the fear of the Lord in your life is a very good thing. The fear of the Lord or fear of God is really reverence or awe. Reverence is that sacred respect for God based on his majesty, power, and glory. It's a recognition of God's power and authority, a recognition that there is a God. He has the authority. He is to be revered or respected. Pagans in that era had no respect for God. That is, no fear of the Lord. They did not fear Yahweh, the God of the Jews. In Genesis 20, verse 11, Abraham said, I thought, surely the fear of God is not in this place. In other words, these are a bunch of pagan people who don't recognize God. They don't fear the Lord. There's no understanding of God's existence. There's no respect or reverence for the God of Israel in this place. And so simply to have the fear of God means that you understand that God exists. There is a God, and he is worthy of our respect and reverence. And God alone is worthy of that honor and devotion. We fear God in the sense of wanting to avoid his displeasure. Sometimes I describe when God is upset with his people as God's fatherly displeasure. It's Mother's Day today. Sometimes mothers have displeasure as well with their children. But from God's perspective, he's like a father. And when we violate his will, we incur God's fatherly displeasure. Well, the fear of God says we want to avoid that. We want to avoid being on the wrong side of God's righteous judgment. Isaiah 66:2. To this man I will look, even to him that is of a poor and contrite spirit, and that trembleth at my word. We find many examples in the Old Testament, especially when people encounter God. And what is their normal response? Well, Moses fell on his face before God. Take your shoes off. The place that you stand is holy ground. So people didn't want to look at God. People were so respectful and so in awe of the majesty and glory of God, they didn't want to talk to God because of the fear of the Lord. They recognized they needed to be highly respectful in God's presence. In today's world, there's a lot of lack of respect. Maybe you could say there's very little fear of God. They think of God as the big guy upstairs. They think of God as their nice grandfather who gives them everything that they want. The hippie Jesus is nobody to be feared. But we should have a respect and a reverence for God, the fear of the Lord. And when we have that, blessed is everyone that feareth the Lord. That's how you become blessed. That's how you can have a happy life. That's how you can have a happy family, is when you know that God exists. You are not God. We are not God. He is the creator. We are the creation. He's the potter. We're the clay. We give God the respect that he deserves. And everything begins with that. Just like the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, well, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of a blessed life. And many people don't have a blessed life because they don't fear God. They don't fear God, they don't have a respect for God, and obviously they don't follow God's commandments. Fear of God lays the foundation, you might say, for the happy life or the good life. If we want to enjoy this kind of life that's described here in Psalm 128, it all begins with the fear of God. The good life then continues as we walk in his ways. Notice, everyone that feareth the Lord and walketh in his way. Of course, walking talks about persisting, tells you how to live, how to conduct your behavior. The word walk suggests continuation and persistence. The word suggests regular conduct or behavior, ongoing nature of the pattern of life. And one who fears God, his pattern moves in his ways, in God's way. God has described for us how he wants us to live. God has commanded us certain things. And when you walk in his ways, it means you are living a life that recognizes God's commands. You are walking obediently, in other words. You're living a life that seeks to conform to the patterns that God gives us to obey his instructions. Believers should desire to walk humbly with their God, a famous passage from Micah 6:8. Deuteronomy 13:4 says, you shall walk after the Lord your God, and fear him and keep his commandments and obey his voice, you shall serve him and hold fast to him. What does it mean to walk in the fear of the Lord or walk in his ways? Well, it means to fear him, keep his commandments, obey his voice, serve him, and hold fast to him. That's how we walk in the fear of the Lord. That's how we walk in his ways. Jeremiah 7:23 says, "Obey my voice, and I will be your God, and you shall be my people, and walk in all the ways I've commanded you, that it may be well with you." How can we have a good life? How can we have things well with us? Well, God blesses obedience. The Bible says you reap what you sow. If you sow to the flesh, you reap destruction. If you sow to the Spirit, you reap life everlasting. And generally speaking, when you put yourself under God's control, you submit to Him, you live your life in fear of God and obeying His commandments, most likely your life is going to work out a whole lot better than if you don't do that. And so the fear of the Lord begins with this walking in His ways and obeying His commandments. Happiness, blessedness, and well-being come from respecting God and obeying His commandments. This is the beginning, you might say, the foundation of a good life. And then the good life enjoys the fruit of one's labor. Going on to verse 2. "Thou shalt eat the labor of thine hands. Happy shalt thou be, and it shall be well with thee." Eating the labor of your hands. The biblical pattern demands that we labor to provide for the needs of our family. Now, generally speaking, in the biblical pattern, the man, the husband, labors so that he can provide for the needs of his family. Ecclesiastes 5:18 says, "It's good and fitting for one to eat and drink and to enjoy the good of all his labor, which he toils under the sun all the days of his life, which God gives to him, for it is his heritage." It's good to labor, especially for the man of the household, the husband, the father who is providing for his household. It's good for him to labor. And I would suggest that most men have some feelings of fulfillment and meaning and purpose by laboring, by taking care of their household. It's one of the things that men feel like they ought to do. Now, granted, a lot of labor is difficult. It's hard. It is labor. It is intensive. We can go back to the Garden of Eden, and part of the curse was toiling by the sweat of one's brow. We all recognize that. And yet still, there is something for men especially about providing for their home through their labor. Most Christian men recognize that that's what they ought to do, and it's what they want to do. Even though labor is hard and toilsome and causes the sweat of one's brow, still one figures that, biblically speaking, that's what he ought to do. And there is meaning and purpose. There's fulfillment and significance in laboring to provide for one's household. So in the good life, you do that. You labor to provide for the needs of your household. You make an honest living through an honest day's work. Somebody said, "It is very pleasant," this is Matthew Henry, by the way, "it is very pleasant to enjoy the fruits of our own industry. As the sleep, so the food of the laboring man is sweet." When you have labored to earn a living and you're able to eat and provide for the family through the fruit of your labor, that is a very good thing. And then going on, verses 3 and 6, the good life assumes biblical marriage and family. Okay, so going on to talk about what else this good life has. "Thy wife shall be as a fruitful vine by the sides of thine house, thy children like olive plants around about thy table." So several things about this good life. First of all, you're married. Now it talks about thy wife, so this is written from the perspective of the man. It's describing the man who is married. So obviously, thy wife, he's married. He has a wife. He's laboring to provide for his wife and children. But he's a married man, and obviously he has some children. Marriage is a good thing. When we talk about the good life, for most people that includes marriage. The Bible says in Proverbs 19:14, "A prudent wife is from the Lord." And so the normal pattern, we know that there are exceptions, but the normal pattern for most people is that they grow up and they get married and they have children. Now again, life does not work out that way for some people. Paul talks about, in fact, in the New Testament, those who may be called to being single. Paul says that there are benefits to being single, but for most people, I don't know what the statistics are, for most people, they get married. for most people, they find that the good life, the fulfilled life, the godly lifestyle is or it will include marriage. So that's going to be part of it for most people. Sadly, in modern society, fewer people are getting married. I don't know if you are familiar with these statistics and things, but people are getting married later in life. They're having fewer children. And the reproduction rate now is down in the United States, down below replacement level. The reproduction rate needs to be like at 2.1, simply for the population to replace itself through their children. And I think the latest statement of that reproduction rate is like 1.6. So we are losing people. If it weren't for immigration, the population of the United States would be decreasing. So that's really not a good thing. It should be that the population replaces itself through its children. But people are not getting married. They're delaying marriage. Today, the average age for young men is about 30 years old. For women, it's about 28, which is considerably later in life than what it used to be. So people are waiting to get married. They're delaying getting married. They're not having as many children. And these are not necessarily good trends in our society. But no matter when you get married, the expectation is, notice again verse 3, thy wife shall be a fruitful vine by the sides of thine house, thy children like olive plants. So you get married and you have children. Again, this is the pattern. This is kind of the expectation, is that young people grow up and they get married and they have children. Your wife is fruitful. Well, that should ring a bell. That sounds kind of familiar. Be fruitful and multiply is what God told Adam and Eve in Genesis 1:28. One's wife like a fruitful vine. Vines, of course, speak of growing grapes. And growing grapes was a very common thing for the Jewish people in the ancient world. Virtually every farm would have at least some grape vines. And a fruitful vine, of course, would have many clusters of grapes. It's talking about productivity here, or production, fruitfulness. This is a very positive image of prosperity and abundance. And, of course, a fruitful vine in this context talks about multiple children, having many children, being fruitful and multiplying. The family contains several or maybe even many children. It's kind of interesting that this is Psalm 128. In Psalm 127, we have some things about children. Verse 3, lo, children are an heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward. Verse 5, happy is the man that has his quiver full of them. So the fruitful wife, the wife like a fruitful vine, would be following this pattern, a quiver full of children, having multiple children. So Christian couples, I think, should plan to have multiple children if possible. Now, we know that that's part of the providence of God. For certain reasons, and various things happen, and people can't have children or can't have a multiple of them. But you don't need to have 10 or 12 of them necessarily. But I think you should plan on having multiple children if that's possible. Christians should see children as a blessing. They're the heritage of the Lord. Large families are good. Sadly, our culture is unsure about the value of children these days. Many people today focus on the inconveniences and the expenses of having children. Many couples are refraining from having children, or they delay having children. And most sadly of all, some people who get married and could have children end up destroying those children. So we live in the kind of a culture that does not celebrate children or having big families. But one of the most positive things that we can do for the church and for the nation is to have children, have a multiple of children, and raise them in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. In fact, one of the best ways to influence our church and our country, our whole nation, our whole world, is to have children and to bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Now, we all know that there's no guarantees about how those children are going to turn out as adults, but if we raise them in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, that can have a good positive influence on our world. You know, Muslims are having a lot of children. One of the reasons that Muslims are increasing in influence these days is because they're very productive. They're very fruitful. They're taking over in certain places simply because they have large families. And Christians, likewise, we are not really in competition, I don't suppose, with the Muslims, but still, one of the ways that we can have influence and make a difference in our world today is through having children. So I think that's a very good thing. mothers in particular are very influential. You know, there's that old statement, it's not in the Bible, but I think it's true. The hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. Mothers influence their children, and their children influence the world. And so even a mother who never has much of a public life, if she raises her children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, her influence can extend through her children to the entire world. What else about the mother here or the wife? Notice in verse 3 again. She shall be like a fruitful vine by the sides of thine house. The sides. It's an interesting Hebrew expression. Maybe something like the deepest part could be translated perhaps as the very heart of your house. Or just some people think it just means in your house. By the sides of your house simply means at your house or in your house. I think this suggests that the wife is primarily concerned about sustaining the operations of the household. We would say that she's a homemaker. Her primary focus is on her household, her family. She's at home. Her husband is out working. The wife is at home taking care of the household. Now, this was the historic and the normal pattern of life in really almost everywhere around the whole world up until the last 100 years or so. It's only been the last 100 years or so under the influence of feminism and other ideas that said that women should not be at home. They should be out in the workforce or out doing other things to find fulfillment and enjoyment. But this pattern shows the woman being at home with her primary concern being her family. Again, another quote I found from Matthew Henry, which I think is good. The wife's place is the husband's house. There her business lies, and that is her castle. Wow, to say that today might get you shot out in the secular world. The feminists out there in the world would absolutely deny that idea. They are very much against the idea that the woman's place is in the home. They find that very offensive these days, but it is a biblical idea. We must not adopt the bad ideas of our secular culture. Just because all the feminists are saying something doesn't mean that we need to knuckle under and adopt those ideas. In fact, I would say that we need to disavow the influence of feminism. I think most women have a natural instinct to get married, to have children, and to care for them. Many working women, those out in the workforce today, those who are very powerful in their careers, many of them would rather, frankly, be at home taking care of the kids. I've seen reports, numbers of reports lately about women who are in their early to mid-30s. Some of these are, you know, what they say, boss babes. These are people who are out in the workforce, deep in their career, and they find something missing. And what they're missing is children. They may or may not be married, but they think that their career is going to give them all the influence, all the power. It's going to give them fulfillment and meaning within their life. And lo and behold, they reach their mid-30s, and what they really, really want is a child. And maybe they don't even have a man in their life. They're not even married. And what they really regret is the fact that they didn't get married earlier on. In fact, I saw a little video clip recently of a girl, looked like early to mid-30s, and she's holding this baby. Apparently a friend had had a newborn baby, and these friends got together, and she's holding this baby and just bawling. I mean, in joy, she's crying for herself, but she's happy about this baby. But her statement was, I have to get one of these. She's an unmarried lady in her 30s who has a deep instinct for a baby, for a child. Why do people have that? Why is it that a lot of women get to their early to mid-30s and just desire a child? Well, I think it's instinct. I think it's human instinct. I think it's a woman's instinct to desire to have that child. And so to deny that and to say that, well, you're gonna fulfill all your instincts and desires by being a powerful person out in the work world and have this career. Well, that's potentially fine for some people, but I think most women want that child. They want children. They want to have that happy family that's described here in Psalm 128. Now, some women, of course, try to have it all, both family and career. But many women who are working out in the career field would be happy to go home and take care of their kids. And I say that that is a Christian sentiment, a Christian point of view. It's the materialistic attitude of many families that make them think that they need two incomes to sustain a certain lifestyle. And nowadays, with housing costs and other costs, there are many people who think, well, we can't have the lifestyle that we want unless we have two incomes. And because we need the two incomes, then we need childcare. And that childcare is going to take up about half of somebody's income. And so sometimes I think, well, instead of spending half of your income on childcare, maybe live a little bit more frugally and a little bit more modestly, and perhaps you could get by with just one person's income, and then that wife could stay at home and take care of the kids. And I would suggest that most godly men would rather have their wives stay at home with the kids rather than working out in the career field. There are multiple problems when women are out in the career field, separated from their families, separated from their husbands. There's multiple things that can go wrong in those situations. I'm not saying that it's sinful necessarily or bad, but if it's possible to live with one income, the income of the man who's taking care of the expenses of the family, if you can do that, I think that's a good pattern to follow. So we see the psalmist here describing the fruitful wife at home with the children. I think that's the proper way to do it. He goes on to describe then other aspects of the blessed life. The children, verse 3, are sitting, thy children like olive plants about thy table. The vine and the olive tree were very positive symbols of peace and prosperity to the ancient Jews. Olives were one of the most important crops that farmers would have back in those days. The more olive trees you had, the wealthier you were. To have an olive tree with many shoots, or having olive trees with many shoots, is a good thing. And the word here, it says olive plants. The word suggests something like olive shoots or sprouts. It's a plural word suggesting several or many. In the ancient world, having many children was a very good thing because you could have them laboring on your farm, and then obviously passing down from one generation to the next. Your bloodline would continue through your children. So having many children was a guarantee of future success. The ideal life for the ancient Hebrew man was to sit on his own property beneath his vine and fig tree, or his olive tree, with his children and grandchildren around him in the kingdom of the Messiah, in the promised land. That was kind of the culmination of everything that God had promised to the Jewish people. Live in the promised land, in the kingdom of the Messiah, under your own vine and fig tree. That was peace, that was prosperity, that was everything that God had promised. God had promised Abraham that land and those children. And so when you're in the land with your children, under your vine and fig or olive tree, I mean, that was it. That's what God had promised, and that was the good life for the Hebrew person. Micah 4:4. Everyone shall sit under his vine and under his fig tree, and no one shall make them afraid. Zechariah 3:10, in that day, saith the Lord of hosts, everyone will invite his neighbor under his vine and under his fig tree. Psalm 52:8, I am like a green olive tree in the house of God. I trust the mercy of God forever and ever. So the image of one's wife like a fruitful vine and children sitting around the table like little olive shoots would be a very pleasant and positive, a picture of prosperity and peace for the Hebrew people. This is the good life. This is the evidence of God's blessing to have all that for yourself. And I'm told that olive trees sometimes do not produce fruit for 40 years. I just planted some more apple trees in my backyard, and I know it'll be four or five years before I get any apples off of those trees. But I'll probably live to see that. I hope I'll live for another 4, 5, 6, 7 years. Maybe I'll be around to see those and get some apples off of those. Maybe if my children persist in this on our property in 20 or 30 years, they'll be still getting apples off of those. But imagine planting a tree that you know is not going to produce anything for 40 years. What are you saying? Well, this is for the next generation. This is for my children. This is for my children's children. And some of you have done things like that. You've built things, you've saved things, you've provided things, prepared things for your children's children. And that is that's a very proper thing for us to do. When we talk about the olive shoots and olive plants, we're talking about generations to come. The blessing of God going on from one generation to the next. And so it talks about, you know, the future hope, future prosperity, and future success. So the picture of the children then sitting around the table like these little olive shoots. They're not going to produce fruit for some time in the future, but right now they're just little olive shoots, little olive trees, and you're enjoying those things, and those things are provided. It's a wonderful thing. Sitting around the table, being around the table is a very good, positive image as well. To gather the family. Many of us will be having a family meal later today. And so the prosperity, the blessings of being around your table with your family, that's all a prosperous and blessed picture. So the picture that we have here is of a married man who provides for his family so that his wife can stay at home with the kids and take care of them. There's a peaceful, prosperous, and fruitful picture here. And again, this is the ideal. And sometimes we can't achieve the ideal. I recognize that. For some people, the ideal is impossible because of just things that happen or maybe decisions that we've made in the past. We can't have this ideal. But that doesn't mean that the ideal doesn't exist, and maybe that other people can enjoy this ideal situation. So we ought to strive to implement this idea in our own lives, and young people especially should grow up with this ideal as their goal. We have a number of young people here who are not yet married or maybe newlyweds. And so what is the good life? What should my life look like? And just by looking at what a Christian family ought to be, the teaching of the New Testament, we know what the good life looks like. But this is another picture of that that we can idealize in our minds. Hopefully, as the young people get older and they graduate, they go off to college or they start a career, whatever it is, eventually that picture of marriage and family at home, taking care of the kids, you know, that is the picture that many of us, you know, have been able to achieve or to enjoy in our lives. And that's what we ought to continue. That's what we ought to sustain. There are many people in our world today who totally disagree with and deny that picture of the family. In our society today, they say the family can be anything that you want it to be. You don't have to be married, or you can be married to another person of the same sex, or maybe several people can all get together and be married and call it a family. Children, doesn't matter where you get them. You can manufacture them in a test tube. You can pay somebody to have a child for you. You can do all sorts of things. And it's all the same. It's all family. And I would say, no, it really is not. There's a biblical pattern to this family business. And it ought to be our commitment to following that example, following that teaching. And as young people get older and they start moving toward the potential of marriage and family, it ought to be their commitment that I am going to follow the biblical pattern. I'm going to try to achieve the good life. I'm going to try to structure my family according to these values. And that will be good, as it says. That will be blessed. That's how you have a happy life. How do you have a happy life? Oh, you go out every weekend and get drunk. You impregnate several women. You have all these babies around, or they call them baby daddies these days. And, you know, you're just profligate and you're living a riotous life. That's how you're happy. And then you get to be 70, 80, 90 years old and you don't have any family. You're all by yourself and nobody to care for you. And you die a lonely old guy in some facility somewhere. That's not a happy life. That's not how you enjoy the blessings of God. So I think we follow this pattern and we try to inculcate that in our children, that this is the proper way to live. So let's go on to verses 5 again at the end here. The Lord shall bless thee out of Zion. The man who experiences these things will see his children's children, as it says here. Thou shalt see the good of Jerusalem all the days of thy life. Thou shalt see thy children's children. So this blessed family will live long enough to see their grandchildren. The family line will continue to succeeding generations. The blessed family enjoys God's goodness for years to come, many generations into the future. Some of you already have grandchildren. You've already achieved this. You are already enjoying seeing your children's children. I've been told that being a grandparent is even more fun than being a parent. I want to test that theory and see if that's true. I hope to live long enough to see some grandchildren myself. So, yeah, to see your children's children. Again, it's not just the one generation. It's future generations. It's succeeding generations that you want to enjoy this blessed lifestyle. But notice again, verse 5a, the first part, the Lord shall bless thee out of Zion. So all this depends upon God's blessing. If you enjoy this kind of a lifestyle, this kind of a picture in your family, it's because of God's blessing. So this blessed, fruitful, and fulfilled life comes from God. And that means you're following the pattern. You're following God's commands. You're living in the fear of the Lord and obeying His commands. You're walking with God. And then you can enjoy this kind of a lifestyle. And then at the end of the verse 6 here, peace be upon Israel. When families follow this pattern, the entire nation receives the benefits. You know, as the family goes, so goes the nation. Why is our nation so weak in many ways, morally speaking? Why are we so weak? Why is there so much corruption? Well, I think that's a reflection in our nation of the fact that our families are disintegrating. Many of our families in the nation are doing very, very badly. There's a lot of family dysfunction in our world today, and I think that's reflected in our nation. So peace be upon Israel. I think the unstated implication here is if you reject this pattern, then you don't enjoy these blessings. These blessings are for those who follow this: fear the Lord, obey His commands, get married, have this kind of a lifestyle, and then you have these blessings. So if you refuse this pattern, if you deny it and reject it, well, then you're denying and rejecting God's blessings. Our choices yield natural consequences. If we fear God and follow His commandments, the normal outcome is that we enjoy the good life. And if we refuse that, the good life is probably beyond our reach. There are many people who will not enjoy this kind of a lifestyle because simply they will not follow God's commands. It's not a guarantee, of course. All kinds of things can happen in the providence of God. This may not be achievable for some people. Some people, like I said, will remain single. Some people have complications in their family lives so that they can't exactly follow this pattern. But by and large, for the most people, typically speaking, normally speaking, those who follow this pattern can enjoy this good life. Psalm 128 reflects the biblical picture of the good life. The family is blessed and happy because they fear God and walk in His ways. God sustains them through the work that the man does, and God blesses the couple with children. The productive man, a fruitful wife, a bunch of growing kids, and a peaceful home for generations to come. That's how God blesses those who fear Him. It's a wonderful and ideal picture of the good life, and we ought to be striving for it. Some of you are at the beginning of this good life. You can be picturing this good life, and you see it coming. You already have it. Some of you are beyond it. That is, you've already had the children's children that you see, and even the children's children's children, even the next generation has come now. And so for someone to see that is a blessing as well. Young people here should adopt and retain this picture of the good life. This is what we strive after. This is what family life should be. Every young person, as they think about marriage and family, as they think about the future, this is it. This is what I'm grasping after. This is what I want for my life. I hope that that's something that you adopt for yourself. This is what we pursue as normal and proper. Is there a proper, normal family? Well, yes, this is it. This is the picture of the proper, normal family. This provides meaning and purpose for human life. And so making good decisions leads to this kind of a lifestyle. Sometimes people can't enjoy this kind of a lifestyle because of the decisions that they make. And so if we want this blessed life, you've got to make the right kind of decisions. On this Mother's Day, we reflect the words of the psalmist, "Peace be upon Israel." And the nation is only made up of, it's composed of families, it's composed of people. How do we have peace on our nation? Well, it's because we have peace in our families. And so as we fear the Lord and walk in His ways, individual families enjoy God's blessings, as do the entire congregation and even the country. And so Psalm 128 reflects our desire for all families, especially for Mother's Day. Enjoy spending time with your olive plants around you today. Rejoice if you see your children's children. May this be a day of blessing, well-being, and peace for you on this special Mother's Day. Well, let's close in prayer.